presentations, water cooler chats, groupthink meetings to kick up thought showers. Office life can be dull. Learn what's happening in nature and on the farm every week with Mairead Lavery from the Farmer's Journal.
Farming with Mairead Lavery on Moncrief.
Mary Phelan from the Farmer's Journal joins us once again. Good afternoon, Mary.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Have you ever sat on a website and tried to buy tickets? For a big one that would...
I actually haven't. The only things that I tend to go to are like Electric Picnic and Body and Soul and those, and they don't usually seem to sell out as quickly. Yeah. I haven't sat online waiting for U2 tickets or Garth Brooks tickets or Ed Sheeran or any of that.
Well, I mean, I've done it for the kids. I've always failed. Because you're there and I'm there ready to go. But even electric picnic tickets, some of them, like the whole camping section, that all went.
Yep.
That was sold out 2 weeks after last year's
electric picnic. I find, though, that there's always tickets floating around, I guess, on the black market as such. If you search hashtag Ticket Fairy on Twitter, I've never been not able to go to something because of... I mightn't have bought the tickets when they were sold out on the day, but there's always someone I can find that will sell them.
That's not the official secondary market.
No.
It's because you're just connected.
I keep trying. I just think it's effort and putting enough feelers out there. And, you know, there was one girl in our office who talked enough about not being able to go to Ed Sheeran because she didn't get the tickets, and somebody took sympathy on her. I think if you just keep talking about it enough, somebody will eventually just give you a ticket to shut you up. Genuinely.
Keep
whinging about it.
Give her some better music to listen to. Good news, 5,000 more workers will be needed in the dairy industry. Why?
Yeah, so it's good news from the point of view of people who might want to work in the dairy industry, but it's bad news for the dairy industry because it's finding it quite difficult to get these on-farm workers, and this means we might have difficulty meeting our Food Harvest 2020 targets. So the dairy industry is looking for people basically to milk cows and for farm managers. So we don't have enough skilled, experienced people, you know, general labourers for on the farm or for skilled professional farm managers. We have a dairy correspondent in the Farmer's Journal, Aidan Brennan is his name, and he was saying to me that he gets calls a couple of times a week from farmers who are looking for farm managers. The Farm Relief Services, which is a farmer-owned cooperative organisation which provides skilled labour to the ag industry, it kind of is like an in-between kind of a recruitment body. They have approximately 150 to 200 vacancies at the moment that they can't fill for relief milkers and for people to help out with calving on farms. So it's a pretty big problem, and FRS have said that there's a 15-20% year-on-year increase in demand for these relief milkers and people to help with calving. But at the same time, year-on-year, there's more of a shortfall in the people available to do this work. And this is mainly because with regards to Irish people, a lot of them are going back into construction, and Eastern Europeans who maybe would have come over to do this kind of work, they are now kind of staying in their own countries because the economies there are improving all the time. So this is
it would be relatively low paid work, would it?
I mean, I don't have the stats on me as exactly what it would pay, but I mean, it would be at least minimum wage, if not more. I mean, if they were coming over, you know, during the Celtic Tiger for, you know, other minimum wage work, it would certainly be that at the very least. But I would expect it to be a bit more because, you know, they are skilled roles. You need to either have some experience or come up to speed very quickly. But we did, you know, years ago, back kind of in the 70s, 80s, there was a farm apprenticeship board that was churning out 300 graduates every year. But when we joined the EU in 1973 and milk quotas came in, farmers weren't, you know, there was a cap on the amount of milk they could produce, therefore a cap on the number of cows that it was worthwhile having. And they didn't need to hire as many people to work on the farm as in times past. So in the 80s and 90s, the demand kind of kept dwindling. By the noughties, it had ceased. So, you know, the Farm Apprenticeship Board basically stopped kind of functioning in terms of churning out these graduates. And while Chagas Moor Park does run a professional dairy farm manager course, that's only seeing about 25 people come out every year. So it's not enough to meet the needs. So it really is kind of a pressing problem. And we could look at bringing in people from, you know, countries like the Philippines and India and South Africa, because you have people from those countries going to New Zealand, for example, to work in their dairy industry. But there's issues with work permits for people from those countries. And then the seasonality of work of the work is a problem as well, because you know, farmers can't guarantee, in some instances, especially for the relief milking work and for the calving work, farmers can't guarantee year long employment contracts.
Yeah,
so that's indeed a problem as well.
And given, I suppose, they'd be working in rural areas, there might be issues around finding accommodation for people.
I would actually think that it might be easier to get accommodation in rural areas, especially with farming. A lot of the time, they'll work meals and accommodation into the package. Mm. And certainly, there wouldn't be demands for high wages on the back of huge rent like you have in cities like Dublin and Cork at the moment.
So, well, that's true.
You know,
yeah.
I wouldn't imagine it's as much of a problem. But in terms of trying to address this, there needs to be more promotion of dairy farming as a career in schools, you know, kind of address it in terms of education. But there also needs to be better organisation at farm level. So farmers themselves, they kind of need to get more organised in terms of making farming and dairy farming a more attractive livelihood. So it's all about trying to make farming as 9 to 5 or as 8 to 6 as possible, which obviously is quite difficult. And I mean, last week I was here talking about calving.
Yeah.
But one kind of example of what farmers are kind of starting to try and do to kind of bring all the farm work within a one kind of 10 or 11 hour period is, for example, feeding cows by night and calving by day. So if you decide to feed the animals their daily allocation of food at night time, then during the day they're going to be relaxing, they're not concentrating on eating, and it's more likely then that they will calve during the day. So you're less likely to be up all night. Yeah.
Yeah. Is a lot of this, I suppose, predicated on the assumption that milk prices will remain fairly stable, which they don't tend to do?
Yeah, I mean, there has been a bad year or two with milk prices. You know, I think this year it's predicted that they will steady, that they will be average. They're not going to be amazing. Mm. Maybe next year that they will be very good. But I think, you know, farmers, when milk prices are very, very good, the onus is on the farmer to put money away so that in the year where prices aren't as good, they can still afford to hire the labour on farm that they need, because the average dairy herd is increasing. Therefore, the workload is also increasing. And even from a farm safety point of view, it is vital that you're not kind of trying to cut down on labour costs just because the milk price is bad this year. It's all about being ridiculously organised in the year that the milk price is good, that you have enough money to put away to tide you over
yeah,
years where it's not.
And this particular issue mightn't just affect Ireland, it might affect other countries.
No, so too. It's quite interesting in the United States at the moment, obviously with Trump now president, the 50% of all workers on US dairy farms are immigrants. Hmm. So 40% of those are Latino, and 90% of that 40% are Mexican. So there are serious concerns now for the US dairy industry. A lot of them are undocumented illegal workers as well. And the money that you can earn on dairy farms in the US is quite impressive. We have an agribusiness editor, and he was in America in November, and he visited several dairy farms, but he interviewed one particular man called Tony, who was running a family farm in Indiana with 4,000 cows. And back in 2004, I think it was, he was paying $93 a day to a dairy farm worker. He's now paying $150 a day. So that equates to a salary of about $50,000 a year. But he is still, despite having the immigrants doing most of the work, it's a huge challenge trying to get labour. And he said that he believes that even if he paid twice that, he still would not be able to get the average American to do this kind of work, that it's an attitude problem. They don't want to roll up their sleeves. They don't want to be surrounded by muck and manure. So, and actually the number of immigrants working on dairy farms has increased by 35% in the last 6 years.
Mm.
So Americans want their manufacturing jobs back, you know, in the rural Midwest, but there are agricultural jobs there that they don't seem to be very interested in.
Funny enough, somebody just texted in to say Irish people don't want to work on farms. The ones who do are absolutely useless, as they get told in ag college that there's a shortage and that the farm owners should offer equity. It's a mess. I'm a farmer working 16 hours a day now during calving. I employ several people. Young Irish are the worst employees.
Okay.
Crikey. Mark in Booterstown says, not known for its agricultural land, automate the dairy farms. They're about a decade behind.
I mean, you can buy robotic milkers, you can buy rotary milking machines, and this is something that the US dairy industry has certainly looked at. But the investment that is required at the moment. I mean, maybe in 10 years' time, when technology advances and these things become cheaper, it might be more feasible for the kind of standard average dairy farm to farmer to purchase these extremely expensive pieces of equipment. But right now, it's still much more economic to be paying people to do the work.
Plus also in the comparison between here and the United States, most of our cattle is grass-fed, and that means they can be sold at a premium, whereas it's kind of like battery farming in the States, where it's probably easier to automate, I would have thought.
Yeah, well, it's corn-fed over there, so that provides a difference in the first instance. But, I mean, most of the farms to start with are much bigger. I mean, that man, Tony, for example, has 4,000 cows. So, you know, the average dairy herd in Ireland at the moment, I think, is 100 cows. So to justify the expense of, you know, the robotic milkers at the moment is a little bit unfeasible.
Yeah. Now, Jenny passed away. Jenny was Ireland's oldest cow.
Yes. So Jenny was 33 years of age. And she's actually not the oldest cow that we've ever had in Ireland. The oldest cow that we ever had in Ireland was Bertha, or Big Bertha, as she was called. She was born on Paddy's Day in 1945 and died on New Year's Eve in 1993. So she was just 3 months shy of her 49th birthday. But Jenny was 33, so I think maybe the second. She was the oldest cow in Ireland at the moment, just doesn't hold the record for being the oldest that has ever lived. She was 33, she was an Angus cow. She lived in Clonakilty in County Cork. She was bought by Sean Deasy at the end of February 1984, which was the year he got married, and bought in the Old Mart in Skibbereen. And he says that Jenny was an impulse buy because he had no trailer with him on the day, and he ended up bringing the calf home in the back of his hatchback car. So it must have been fate. He obviously saw something in her.
You wouldn't do that now, I think.
No. And she had her last calf in February 2013, and she was known to disappear to the furthest point of the paddock at the sight and sound of a cattle lorry entering the yard. So maybe this is why she lived so long. Maybe they admired her.
She was cute enough. Staying out of trouble.
Yeah. And she appeared in the Farmer's Journal, I think it was last year. So she became a bit of a celebrity, and she had lots of people calling to see her.
Right. Finally, is this the time of the year when people might be buying a bull?
Yes, because our pedigree editor, Shane Murphy, has printed in the paper this week 5 tips for picking out your bull. So especially, I think, in the pedigree world, they'd be looking at, if they're, you know, in the market to buy a new bull, this is the time of year they'd be thinking about it. So he has an article on the 5 tips that you should be, or 5 important things, I guess, you should be taking into account if you're looking at a bull. And what I found the most interesting was knowing the amount of work that the young bull will be undertaking, because in his first year, you don't want a bull to be overworked.
Okay.
Now, work is one way of describing what bulls do.
Yeah.
So as a general rule of thumb, a bull can service as many cows as he is months old. So if he is between 16 and 18 months old, for example, he can service approximately 16 to 18 cows in a season. But if you spread out his workload, you might get a little bit more work out of him. That's what one of the livestock guys told me today.
And isn't it the case that a very important thing is to look at their back legs and their back feet?
Yeah.
Because they're putting more pressure on the back feet a lot.
Yeah, and if they are overworked, they will get injured and they can go lame. You know, if something like the cow twists the wrong way, for example, they can easily incur an injury. And the other thing to check for is a fertility test cert, because this will give you reassurance as to the semen production capability of a bull. Because as with humans, you know, both rams, which is a male sheep, and bulls can suffer from low sperm count, poor sperm mobility. I mean, all those issues could apply as well. And I mean, a bull's really only function is to
get
cows pregnant. So that's very, very important. And then other things, you know your market. So you need to know the market, obviously, that your bull's calves are going to be used in. So for example, if you're a dairy farmer, you want female calves, you know, you might want the replacement heifers, and you might want to get them to the parlour as soon as possible. So you want a breed of bull that has a tradition, or is known for having easy calving and maybe a shorter gestation period in terms of how long the cow would be pregnant for.
Okay, yeah. Bit of charm wouldn't go amiss.
No,
you know,
no.
Sing my song.
Of course, maybe that's the most important thing, and I'm, you know, completely not paying heed to it at all.
Yeah.
But it must play some role.
Yeah, let him grow a moustache or something. Tell that person that said we're 10 years behind and should automate that we actually are global leaders, with New Zealand in dairy, and countries that did automate years ago have moved away from it and gone back to using humanoids.
Very interesting.
So, there you go. Yep. Mary, always a pleasure. Mary Phelan from the Farmer's Journal there. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Tune in every Wednesday from 3:45 to hear more about farming life on Moncrief.